This is Dwelty Bookheads, where we interview important books that can change your life. I'll ask the questions and I'll let the book do the talking using words from its own pages. This is essentially a book interview. Your time is valuable, so let's get started. Today, I'll be interviewing Win the Day, 7 Daily Habits to Help You Stress Less and Accomplish More by Mark Batterson. It currently has an overall rating of 4.8 on Amazon, and 86% of the reviewers call it a 5-star book. Question number 1. What's the book about? In this book, there are 7 habits dedicated to helping you stress less and accomplish more. It's about unleashing the power of 24 hours. Transform your perspective of a single day, and you'll discover the potential waiting to be grasped at the beginning of each new sunrise. Question. You start the book with the story of William Osler and the 22 words that shaped his life. Who is he, and what are these words? William Osler was the most famous medical doctor of his generation. He was called the father of modern medicine. When Osler was a medical student at 21, however, he knew none of this. All he knew was that he was overwhelmed by what felt like the weight of the world. That's when 22 words, written by the Scottish historian Thomas Carlyle, changed everything. Our grand business undoubtedly is not to see what lies dimly at a distance, but to do what lies clearly at hand. Let me repeat these 22 words. Our grand business undoubtedly is not to see what lies dimly at a distance, but to do what lies clearly at hand. 42 years later, Sir William Osler, after becoming the famous doctor that he was, delivered an address at Yale University. Reflecting on his own insecurities and uncertainties, he issued a timeless challenge to those students. He told them to live in day-tight compartments. The load of tomorrow, said Osler, added to the load of yesterday and carried today, makes the strongest falter. The secret to his success is the solution to 1,000 problems. Instead of fixating on things that lie dimly at a distance, concentrate on what lies clearly at hand. Question. Speaking of life-changing words, in the book, you say a friend asked you a question that revolutionized the way you live. What was it? The question was, can you do it for a day? There is a simple kind of genius to that question. Why do so many problems remain unresolved? Why do so many bad habits remain unbroken? Why do so many goals remain unachieved? 9 times out of 10, we're so overwhelmed by the size of the problem, or the habit, or the goal, that we give up before we even get started. Since I was introduced to that question, I've asked it of lots of people facing lots of challenges. No one has ever said no, not one. Why? Because anyone can do anything for a day. Do you think you can do it for a week? Probably. A month? Maybe. A year? I'm not so sure. As the timeline gets longer, so do the odds. How about the rest of your life? I won't even answer that one. Can you do it for a day? Now that I can do. The odds of success get greater as the time compartments get smaller. If you get it down to day-tight compartments, anything is possible. Question. You call the first habit flipping the script, which means telling yourself a new story. Can you give an example of this habit? Bo Eason had no business playing football. At Bo's first practice with his high school football team, every player was measured and weighed. Bo was found wanting. He measured 5 feet tall and weighed 100 pounds. After practice, Bo said to his dad, "The coach thinks I'm too small to play." Bo's father was a former ranch hand. Nothing is more valuable to a rancher than his ranch dog. The ranch dog does the work of 10 men, herding the cattle and getting them where the rancher wants them to go. When a ranch dog has puppies, the rancher identifies the smallest puppy, the runt of the litter, by tying a piece of yarn around its neck. After 12 weeks, the rancher gives away all the puppies except the runt of the litter. Why? As Bo's dad said, the runt always has to work harder to survive against the bigger brothers and sisters. Always. The runt becomes the smartest, the fastest, the most determined. Of all the puppies, the runt's heart is the biggest. The rancher stakes his whole livelihood on that fact. How did it turn out for Bo Eason? He was the first safety chosen in the 1984 NFL draft, earning All-Pro honors his second season with the Houston Oilers. "I made that dog story my story," Bo said, "and I've been telling myself that story ever since." Bo Eason flipped the script on his high school coach who didn't think he was football material. Question. To achieve big goals like Bo Eason did, you say we need to focus on staying in a state of just manageable difficulty. What exactly does this mean? To achieve big goals, you've got to attempt things that are just beyond your ability. The technical term is just manageable difficulty, or JMD. It can't be so easy that you become bored, or so difficult that you quit. People falsely assume that it takes only 10,000 hours to achieve expertise in anything, but there's a catch. If you practice the right thing the wrong way, it's counterproductive. The key is something Anders Ericsson called deliberate practice, and it's three-dimensional. The first dimension is well-defined goals. These allow you to measure your progress, and they facilitate a feedback loop. The second dimension is reverse engineering. It's studying the best practices of others, then adopting them and adapting them to your unique situation. For example, I read 3,000 books before writing one, but I did more than that. I reverse engineered them, trying to figure out the tricks of the trade. The third dimension is effort. Deliberate practice requires near maximal effort, which is neither fun nor easy. When you're training your body, you have to stress it beyond its ability to maintain homeostasis. For the record, this is good stress, or eustress. Anything less than 70% effort actually maintains the status quo. Question. Let's move on to the second habit to win the day, what you call kissing the wave. What exactly does this mean? I have a friend who has had migraine headaches for 5 years. Moments of relief are few and far between. The pain became so debilitating that he eventually had to resign from the church he was pastoring. He's been to countless specialists. He's tried a wide variety of treatment plans. Nothing seems to help much or for long. I asked him one day how he's managed the pain and all the emotions to go with it. He said simply, "I've learned to kiss the wave." I must have given him a quizzical look, so my friend explained. He was quoting Charles Spurgeon. "I've learned to kiss the wave that throws me against the rock of ages." It's a powerful sentence all by itself, but the backstory makes it even more meaningful. Few people have advanced the kingdom of God quite like Charles Spurgeon. Along with pastoring the largest church in the world, he wrote 150 books, started a college, and led 66 charities. Despite his many successes, however, Spurgeon was marked by melancholy. It took a measure of courage for him to admit his thorn in the flesh, but he did not keep secret his many bouts with deep depression. Like my friend who suffers from migraines, Spurgeon experienced few remissions from his depression. He said, "My spirits were sunken so low that I could weep by the hour like a child, and yet I knew not what I wept for." Despite his pain, he learned to kiss the wave. Question. In the book, habit 3 is to eat a frog first thing every day. Can you explain what you mean by this phrase? If you ever have to eat a frog live, it's best done first thing in the morning. Mark Twain is purported to have given this advice, but if you have to eat two frogs, he recommended eating the bigger one first. I know this scenario sounds awfully unlikely, but it's good advice nonetheless. Why eat the frog first thing in the morning, you ask? Because you can go through the rest of your day knowing that the hardest task is behind you. What's the one thing you least like to do, but you feel best about afterward? That's your frog. It's often the hardest habit to establish, but it pays the biggest dividends. Whatever it is, you've got to figure out a morning routine that works for you. And I might add, one that works for your spouse, and your kids, and your dog, and your boss. I had a father-in-law who placed a high priority on prayer. After his treadmill workout at 4 o'clock, he was kneeling in prayer by 5 o'clock. He read 3 newspapers every morning and attempted at least 1 crossword puzzle. He did all that before most people ever wake up. Of course, he grew up on a farm, which seems to be an awfully unfair advantage. He was used to milking the cows, which is not unlike eating the frog. Question. Why do you think it's so hard for so many people to incorporate those morning routines that are so important? Because there will be days when it's all you can do to get out of bed or get out the door. But within those hurried minutes of those kind of days, there are also holy moments. Like time, you don't find them, you make them. If you want to win the day, get a small win right out of the gate. Do 7 minutes of meditation. Read 1 chapter. Do your age and sit-ups. None of those things are very time-consuming, so why don't we do them? Most goals are important, but they aren't urgent. Eating the frog is making time for the important things over and above the urgent things. Ironically, the morning routine doesn't begin in the morning. It begins the night before, when you go to bed. You gotta get to bed on time. Question. But aren't some people just more successful due to their inborn tendencies or gifts or overall personality type? Friedrich Nietzsche once said, quote, "In the case of everything perfect, we are accustomed to abstain from asking how it became. We rejoice in the present fact as though it came out of the ground by magic." End quote. This idea that a select few have seemingly superpowers while the rest of us schlep our way through life is what Nietzsche called the cult of genius. It's easy to envy the success of others while ignoring the sacrifices that made it possible. Quit envying their outcomes and start imitating their inputs. Reverse engineer the people you respect. Can I let you in on a little secret? The more effortless something looks, the more effort went into it. Great musicians make hard look easy. Same with athletes. Pick any sport. When Phil Mickelson was a young golfer, he struggled with his short game. A coach challenged him to make 100 three-putt putts in a row. After many attempts, Phil sunk 99 in a row before missing his 100th attempt. Most of us would have rounded up. Not Phil Mickelson. He went right back at it until he accomplished the 100 putt challenge. That's how you win 44 PGA events and 5 majors. Excellence seems miraculous, but it's actually quite mundane. Excellence is a habit that is repeated consistently and correctly over time. Question. Habit number 4 is to fly the kite. The name of this habit comes from a story of building the first bridge across Niagara Falls. What happened then? In the mid-18th century, the only way to cross the Niagara Gorge was by boat. On November 9, 1847, a civil engineer named Charles Ellet Jr. was commissioned to build a suspension bridge across the chasm. Ellet naturally chose the narrowest neck, but it still presented an impossible challenge. How do you stretch the first wire across an 800-foot gorge with 225-foot cliffs on either side and rapids that rush toward a waterfall? At dinner one night, Ella's team brainstormed ways of getting the first cable across the chasm. One person proposed a rocket. Another suggested a cannon. That's when they came up with a rather ingenious idea. A cash prize for a kite flying contest. On January 30th, 1848, a kite made it across the gorge. The day following that successful flight, a stronger line was attached to the kite string and pulled across. Then, an even stronger line, then a rope, and then finally a cable consisting of 36 strands of 10-gauge wire. The suspension bridge was eventually built, and it all started with one kite string. Question. So what's the moral of the story? If you do little things like they're big things, God will do big things like they're little things. That's how kite strings turn into suspension bridges. Don't despise the day of small beginnings. Little by little, bad habits are broken. Little by little, good habits are built. Little by little, dreams become reality. By definition, stretch goals are little by little. That's how you go from strength to strength. Over time, your ceiling becomes your floor. What seemed impossible 10 years ago now feels like a walk in the park. Question. The fifth habit in the book is called cutting the rope, which in essence means taking a risk. Can you give an example of cutting the rope in your own life? When I was 19 years old, I walked into the admissions office at the University of Chicago and I informed them that they could have their full ride scholarship back. This college was the third ranked university in the country at that time, and I wasn't paying a penny for my education. I'll never forget the confused look on the face of the admissions counselor when I told her that I was transferring to Central Bible College. She had a hard time transferring my credits because it wasn't even regionally accredited. That move made no sense academically or financially. It was a dangerous stunt, but not as dangerous as rejecting what I believed to be God's plan and purpose for my life. There are moments in life when playing it safe is risky. You've got to make the move, make the call, make the leap, and, I might add, make a mistake. Did I second-guess that decision to transfer? More than once. Did it involve a measure of sacrifice? A leap of faith always does. But those are the moments that become milestones. You're one decision away from a totally different life. Question. The last habit to win the day that we'll cover is what you call seeding the cloud. It's basically the habit of sowing and reaping. Can you explain this in relation to prayer? Seeding the clouds is exercising our faith, and it starts with praying hard. The bigger you dream, the more you have to pray. The greatest tragedy in life is that prayers go unanswered because they go unasked. God won't answer 100% of the prayers you don't pray. Prayer is the way we write history before it happens. It's the difference between letting things happen and making things happen. You've got to pray through to the breakthrough. And remember this, gratitude is thanking God after He does it. Faith is thanking God before He does it. And finally, my favorite quotes from the book are as follows. A grand business undoubtedly is not to see what lies dimly at a distance, but to do what lies clearly at hand. The runt becomes the smartest, the fastest, the most determined of all the puppies. If you do little things like they're big things, God will do big things like they're little things. You are one decision away from a totally different life. The greatest tragedy in life is that prayers go unanswered because they go unasked. Anyone can do anything for one day. And that's it for this book interview with Win the Day, 7 Habits to Help You Stress Less and Accomplish More by Mark Batterson. You've been listening to The Wealthy Bookheads, where we interview important books that can change your life. You can order this book in the links below or on our website if you'd like to support our cause. It puts a few pennies in our pockets without taking any extra pennies from yours. As always, thank you for your time.